Hello. We bring you the following as part of an hour-long KPFA feature presentation titled After Roe in Search of Reproductive Justice. The team is Hannah Wilson, Kendall Krako, Kate Raphael, CJ Maite, and myself, your host, Sarah Blanco. For today, we want to feature some realities of seeking an abortion after Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization of 2022 overturned Roe versus Wade and overturned Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey. Before we get started, we want to also acknowledge that for many women and birthing folks, true access and actual choice over our bodies were non-existent even before Roe versus Wade was overturned. Many of the same people who demand forced birth will also attack contraception and the rights of the LGBTQ+ community next. I cringe at the thought of how things can and will likely get worse. Today, we voice it to call out for change. Reproductive justice is connected to our rights to autonomy and control over our own bodies, and it is about access to quality health care and access to daycare and higher education, access to STI prevention and contraception. It is about living wages, and it's about the ability to live free of judgment and violence upon our bodies, free of domestic violence, assaults, rape, trafficking, and enslavement. Plus, when you consider the forced sterilizations of Native women, then reproductive justice is also about the right to give birth, and to do so where your personal safety is cherished and protected before, during, and after giving birth. Thus, justice and rights and choice is more than just about abortion. But the political power plays and inherent racism are all connected. You will notice the term reproductive justice in our program's title. Sister Song identifies that that term was actually invented in 1994 by a group of Black women that convened to discuss how the women's rights movement was run by white women of middle class or of wealth, and that women of color and other marginalized women and trans folks really needed their own national movement. They called themselves Women of African Descent for Reproductive Justice. You can learn more at sistersong.net. Reproductive justice is a human right. Heads up, the struggle and stories may be difficult to hear or are triggering. KPFA producer Hannah Wilson speaks with Dr. Shelley Sella. They explore who seeks abortions and how access has been disastrously affected in post-Roe America. One of Dr. Sella's mentors was assassinated by an anti-abortion zealot, and Dr. Sella vowed to continue the work.
So I'm Dr. Shelley Sella. I'm a recently retired OBGYN who provided abortion care for 30 years, providing first, second, and third trimester abortions.
This is Hannah Wilson here with Dr. Sella. I'm curious, what drew you to doing abortion care?
I actually went to medical school to be able to provide abortions. I had worked at a feminist women's clinic in the late 70s as a, what they called then, a lay health worker. And that's when I was introduced to abortions.
What about providing abortions was important for you, was meaningful?
What struck me from the first abortion that I attended was, well, two things. One was, so I was the person who was helping the woman through the process, and that felt very intimate and even potentially transformative. And so when I thought about it, I realized, well, these were first trimester abortions. They were very short. And I just thought, wow, that's really amazing how this very short, safe procedure could have such a huge impact and a positive impact on someone's life.
So a question that I had was, what was the variety of women who came to you in terms of access and deciding to have abortions?
I mean, I think there's a stereotype of who has abortions. I think we think of perhaps a teenager girl who in high school who finds out that she's pregnant and decides that she can't continue the pregnancy. But in fact, it's anybody. Now, in terms of national statistics, the overwhelming number of people at this point seeking abortion care are already mothers, living in poverty, women of color. I guess I was surprised by all the different people that I was taking care of. Overwhelmingly, those I cared for were Christian, with varying degrees of faith, ranging from those who didn't really practice to very devout Christians, be they evangelical Christians, devout Catholics, and not just Christians, also Muslims, Hindus, Jews. I've taken care of women in burqas. I've taken care of Orthodox Jews. I've taken care of pagans. The pagans don't seem to have a problem with abortion. But some of the more devout Christians did. And I think that was hard for them, because their faith, as they understood it, was anti-abortion and saw that abortion was a mortal sin. It was not uncommon for people to think, to believe, rather, that they would go to hell if they had the abortion. But that didn't stop them, because there's religion, there's politics, there's all of that. And then there's the reality of people's lives. And that's what drives people to have abortions. And that's really what I learned over the years, that it's not about your religion and it's not about your politics. It's not about who you voted for president. It's about what is going on in your life right now.
I know at some point you went to also a practice in Kansas. Is that right?
Correct. 2001, I met Dr. George Tiller, who was really a renowned provider of third trimester abortion care in Wichita, Kansas. And I trained with him and I worked with him. At the time that he was practicing, Dr. Tiller was one of two providers of third trimester abortion care. So he was definitely under attack constantly, daily harassment, launched by anti-abortion groups. Operation Rescue was one of them. So it was never ending. There was a assassination attempt years earlier. The clinic was really constantly under attack.
Dr. Sella worked at the Kansas clinic for 7 years, from 2002 to 2009. In 2009, Dr. Tiller was assassinated. So what was it like for you to provide care in that environment? How did you cope with that, and what was the impact on you as a provider?
You know, I don't know. People always focus on the protesters outside the clinic, and they are obnoxious and rude and horrible, but that's really not the worst of it. The worst, ultimately, is that Dr. Tiller was killed. But all the legislative attacks, all the complaints to the medical board by Operation Rescue, all the companies that refused to do business with the clinic because they were told that if they continued to do business, their business would be boycotted by Operation Rescue. So it felt like slow strangulation, that the clinic, Dr. Tiller, had become pariahs in his community.
After Dr. Tiller's murder, the Kansas clinic shut down. But Dr. Sella and her colleagues vowed to continue the work. She and another colleague were invited to move their practice to an abortion clinic in Albuquerque, New Mexico. At the New Mexico clinic, they started offering patients a journal to write in after their abortion.
So what we did was in the recovery room next to every recliner where the woman would go after the abortion to recover, there would be a little table with a notebook and a pen. And on the notebook, on the outside, it said something like, this is for you to write your thoughts and for others. And so a lot of the notebooks were people writing to the next person reading this. And so part of it would be, in a way, giving sustenance to the next person along the lines of, I know this is hard, but I know that you're making the right decision. You go, girl. And a lot, though, was also a lot of religious thoughts. God is with you. I'm praying to God that he understands what I'm going through. May God forgive me. So it was mixed because some of it was kind of exemplified their struggle to hope that God understood what they were going through and would forgive them because they were committing a sin. And some of the entries were different, were more positive, like God is with you. God loves you.
What are your concerns now that we're in this post-Roe era?
This is a disaster. This is an overwhelming disaster. And it was bad before Roe was overturned because Roe was a skeleton by the time it was overturned in so many states. There were so many restrictions. SB 8 had passed in Texas, basically banning abortions after 6 weeks, and other states were following suit. And even before SB 8, things were bad in so many states, and there was such limited access. So everything is magnified exponentially. And the worry is always who will be able to access an abortion and who won't. Everything has changed now that Roe has been overturned. Where once it was a challenge for people to raise money in states, in the many states where Medicaid doesn't cover abortion, to raise the money for an abortion, once the money has been raised, to realize, oh, now they're too far to be seen in that state because of gestational limits, restrictions on care, then needing to raise money to be able to go to another clinic, the constant having to raise money to get to another clinic has now gotten so much worse because there isn't access. People have to travel so much further, and which leads to such a huge delay in care. So what was a problem is now, and it wasn't even a small problem, it was a big problem then, but now it's monumental. Potentially someone could find out that they're pregnant at 8 weeks. Normally that would be a 5-minute in-clinic abortion or a medication abortion. Now is delayed, 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 and gets further and further.
I think that you've stated that childbirth is 15 times more dangerous than having an abortion. Can you explain that a bit?
I think often people say, oh, why doesn't she just continue the pregnancy and give the baby up for adoption, which is a whole other issue, the issue of adoption. And Amy Coney Barrett's remark that abortion isn't necessary because women can just give birth and drop the baby off at a fire station to be adopted. And that completely negates, A, the experience of being pregnant and what that's like for those perhaps who have been hiding the pregnancy and no one knows. And once you keep, after a certain point, it's no longer a secret. And the condemnation of your community, of your classmates, of your work, all of that could be at risk if you're continuing a pregnancy. And it also does not acknowledge the risks of childbirth. And the childbirth mortality rate in the United States is increasing, not decreasing. And abortion is safer than childbirth. There are risks of childbirth that we don't talk about. And that is a crime, really. I mean, this is a country that doesn't have universal health care, doesn't have adequate and affordable child care. So many people are living in poverty. And the idea that women should then go ahead and have children, go through the risks of childbirth, which are considerable, can be considerable, and then not having the means to care for them because our society does not take care of families. And then to ban abortion. I can't even think of the words to say how angry that that makes me. It's infuriating. And I think also what people don't understand until they're in this situation or until they're with someone who's in this situation, the incredible desperation of women who know that they cannot continue the pregnancy. And that's something that I have encountered my entire career providing abortion care. And that is only going to get worse, because when you can't access it in your own community and you have to travel and you have to make all these arrangements and time keeps passing, the desperation only increases.
Thank you, Hannah. Hannah was in conversation with Dr. Shelley Sella about her 3 decades providing first, second, and third trimester abortions. This was part of an hour-long KPFA feature presentation titled After Roe in Search of Reproductive Justice. You can listen to the full hour program by visiting kpfa.org, then click on Area 941 Podcasts, and then click on KPFA Presents. You'll find the full version of this show, plus the individual segments and various other KPFA feature presentations.